Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Beach Pass, this is my Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue. Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you. Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Oh, yeah, welcome to Pitch Pass 2.0. Now, that's not the official title of the show, but it kind of is. This is a rebirth, a relaunch of Pitch Pass. New website, much easier for you to find the show. It's now on YouTube. We can get you on Stitcher, on your iTunes, where you could got it before. Any place you're looking for it now, it's available. Not a relaunch, though, if you're a fan of the podcast. Everything about the show will stay the same, only you're going to get more Pitch Pass in 2013. Hopefully, that is something that you're excited about. PitchPass.com for everything show-related. Our Twitter handle, our Facebook page, everything at PitchPass.com. Got a fun opening, inaugural, relaunch Pitch Pass 2.0 show for you. We've got Austin Berry, the Rookie of the Year, the reigning Rookie of the Year, will join us, the Chicago Fire defender, as he gets ready for the 2013 season. But first, we bring in the man who calls the matches for MLS on NBC Sports Network, Kyle Martino. Kyle, welcome to Pitch Pass. How are you?
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this.
What are you excited about, Kyle?
I mean, you just love something new and shiny. That sounds awesome.
All right, so I introduced you as NBC Sports Network's Kyle Martino, but is Fox's reality celebrity high-diving competition Stars in Danger, is that a better way to introduce you from here on out? Is you got a new gig?
Basically, my title is too big to fit on my desk. I'm working on getting a longer desk so I can fit the title.
Well, you got to tell me how you got that gig.
Yeah, so I mean, I ever since getting involved in television through soccer, I've kind of fallen in love with the idea of just being, on camera, being a personality, just being a part of fun things and just having a blast. And I went in and met with some of the people at Fox when I was there doing the show. And some things had come up in the past where they wanted me to come in and host some things for them, and it didn't really fit with my schedule. And this time around, it did. And I think Michael Strahan's got it figured out. I'm just chasing down Michael Strahan.
Did you know you wanted to do this when you were playing or even when you were in college?
Yeah, you know what's funny? When I was playing, they did a show for David Beckham, and they had done a couple MLS shows where they gave me a camera and let me sort of run around and just goof off and be myself. And I had at that point fallen a little bit in love with the idea of being a sort of an on-air personality, whether it was in sports or not, after my career was done. But I thought my career would end around 38, and instead it ended at 28. So I've had a lot more time to work on it lately.
Now, are you at the point where, like, for the Stars in Danger, did you just get the gig, or did they make you come in and do some read-throughs?
Yeah, I had to go through the full audition process.
Kyle, come on! You're too big for that!
Everything. It was actually cool. The way I got the gig is I actually went into audition for X Factor and made it down to the last four guys for that, and I guess my dimples weren't big enough, so Mario Lopez got the gig instead of me. And that led to this Stars in Danger thing. I actually didn't have to audition for that. Based off of my X Factor audition, they let me take the job.
So do you have like an agent now, like a Hollywood agent?
I'm a big deal, man. I was going to refer you to my agent, but I like you guys too much.
And now I'm a little confused. What if you had gotten the X Factor gig? Would you have had to give up your soccer responsibilities?
No, I mean, soccer is always my first love, and NBC is an amazing place. I'm so happy there. They are first position. They are my priority, and they have been so great about understanding that's something I'm passionate about, too, which is, building an on-air sort of hosting career, and it will never be at the expense of having to give up my weekend job. That's something I love very much and will always be doing.
So you're going to be like Ryan Seacrest. You're going to have like 75 gigs. You're going to be producing reality shows on E! You're going to have the whole nine yards going.
I just want a much more complicated life where I have issues and people trying to sue me and stuff like that. That's what I just dream about.
No off season for you. That's your goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it used to be. Me and Landon Donovan are complaining every now and then about not having an off season, but Well, but now I'm ready to just get busy.
You brought it up, so let's talk about U.S. national team first, since they're the most pressing issue. They've got a friendly on January 29th at BBVA Compass versus Canada. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is, with the MLS guys in and with World Cup qualifying literally right around the corner after that friendly, is there anybody who isn't in the setup or hasn't been in the setup for the last year? Can anybody pop and make a difference in the immediate World Cup qualifiers or even down the road?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's tough. You saw Juergen saying there's anywhere from 4 to 9, which is a wide range of guys that could potentially be involved in the qualifying cycle. You know, the game against Canada is an interesting one because they've already said they're bringing in a younger team. It's a great opportunity to see what guys are made of, but yet still a far cry from a World Cup qualifier. So even someone that blows it out in that game, it's still hard to know with the atmospheres that you go up against in World Cup qualifying, how pressured it is, the fact that all these European guys are going to come in, they're not used to playing with them. You know, there's still a lot of variables, but I would say guys that have come in that are new, that have impressed early, are guys like Omar Gonzalez. You know, he's back in the mix. I think he's one of the best answers, whether it's short term or long term, to an aging center back position. And he's done well in camp. I was there in training the other day, although they hardly ever brought out a soccer ball. You could tell that the coaches were happy with Omar. Another name is sort of a blast from the past that I think is getting a little bit of momentum here is Benny Feilhaber. He, you know, he's skillful. He's kind of the exact player you'd think Juergen would love. He loves his defensive two-way midfielders that are good on the ball, that can play this possession game. He's gaining in confidence. I chatted with him a little bit over at the Home Depot Center. I think he made a fabulous move, and Sporting made a fabulous move in acquiring him in the offseason to fit into that system that plays a lot like the U.S. Is trying to play. So I would say those are early guys. Will Bruin's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit raw. I still think he needs to figure out the game when he doesn't have the ball. He's gotten a lot better since he's been at Houston, figuring out running off the ball. But he has that strength to hold the ball up. He has that finishing ability in the box, and I think Juergen's been happy with him.
Yeah, Will Bruins was a name that I kind of had circled, being that they called in Alan Gordon in the fall to wrap up the first round of the World Cup qualifying, and I thought, well, this could be an Alan Gordon type, just younger and kind of somebody age-appropriate for the cycle that's coming up.
Yeah, as good as you know, I'm a big fan of Jozy Altidore. He's scoring goals now, so all the naysayers are back on his side. Yeah, he was catching some criticism for some of his performances with the U.S. team with his inability to hold the ball up. And I think ever since Brian McBride, the U.S. hasn't really had that strong guy that can play with his back to the goal that can also turn and be a really good goal-scoring threat. And I think Will definitely has a ways to go, but he's on the right track, and it's intriguing. And I think he's got the eye of Juergen Klinsmann. I think it's a project they want to take on.
You talked about Omar Gonzalez. I also was thinking about Matt Beisler, and Will Bruin was another one, about guys, because, you know, he said 4 to 9, but once you take guys like Zuzi, who's kind of already in the setup, once you take guys
Eddie
like
Johnson.
Eddie Johnson's another one. Once you take those guys out, there's really slim pickings for guys who haven't featured. And at least for those three guys that we mentioned, Bruin, Gonzalez, and Beisler, you can say, all right, well, they're going to get their chance, whether it be this year or even going into the World Cup or even after the World Cup. But you look at a guy like Brad Davis, who I thought you were going to say when you mentioned a blast from the past, that guy's got – he's got a – it's a stopwatch on him. And this is his time to shine because there's no next cycle for him. How is he looking so far?
Yeah, you know, I went over the other day and tried to get a glimpse. I wanted to see them in a game scenario because you know, I'm a huge fan of Brad Davis. I grew up in the youth national team system with him. You know, I think he has the best left foot in Major League Soccer. You know, I coined it the left-footed David Beckham. I mean, he has the ability to change a game. He also has that sort of Eddie Lewis, stay wide, get chalk on your shoes, whip service in style that I think the U.S., you know, lacks at times. But I just don't think he fits into what Juergen Klinsmann wants to do. You know, I think he's in there because Juergen wants a close look at him. I think Juergen's intrigued because he is a terrific MLS player. But, you know, in a tournament scenario, an older guy who's going to be in his mid-30s at the next World Cup doesn't exactly have the pace to get by guys at the international level. you know, I just think that Brad might be a risk. If it's 26 year old Brad Davis, I say yes. But I say at this point, I just don't know if in a tournament cycle you can take a risk on an older guy like Brad, who's kind of a luxury out there at times, when you're really not sure how he's going to perform in those competitive tournament atmospheres at the international level.
So put yourself in Brad Davis's shoes at this point. None of that stuff is probably a shock to him if you were to say that to his face. But how frustrating would that be if you were Brad Davis and thinking to yourself, well, when I was 26 years old, I wasn't really getting a good look.
Yeah, you know, and that's the most frustrating part, because I think Brad Davis has been good enough for a long time. And, you know, I talked to him during the year when we were in Houston with NBC, and although he said the right things, you could tell by his demeanor and his you know, sort of body language that he was really upset that he hadn't gotten a shot for a long time. And, you know, I think that will be a little frustrating, because he'll look around and he'll see younger players that might be able to cover more ground, that might have a little more speed, that don't have the decision-making ability and don't have anywhere near the service that Brad Davis has off his left foot, that at the international level might get a nod before him simply because it's a young, fast, strong game. And when you only have 2 days in between every game, you have to look at the roster and tell yourself, you know, we can't have too many guys over 30.
So let's dial it back down to where Brad Davis is established and does excel, and that's in MLS. We just got done with the super draft. The supplemental draft just wrapped up. I wanted to go one step further even back and talk about the MLS combine. And
yeah.
I wanted to get your thoughts on different team philosophies. And I look at the team that's in my backyard, which is DC United, who doesn't seem to put much stock at all into what happens at MLS Combine. Last year, they drafted Nick DeLeon, even though he had a really bad combine by his own admission. This year, the guy they drafted, Taylor Kemp, he said, I thought they were interested in me, and they didn't even bother to speak with me when we were down there in Fort Lauderdale, and then they ended up turning around drafting him. What do you think the mindset is between a team who doesn't put any stock in the combine and a team who may look at a guy who pops, hasn't had a good season or maybe even a good career, but then pops in the combine and they grab him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at coaches whose strategy is, let me try to get allocation money, I'm going to get rid of picks to see if I can grab actual proven MLS players, and if I can't, let me just try to build that allocation bank account. I like that strategy. You know, I mean, and here's the thing. Here's the reason is, go back and look at all these first round picks. Go back and look at anyone who was either the first pick or a first round pick that was highly touted. I mean, go back and look at the amount of players that didn't really turn into anything. You know, I mean, it's such a long term strategy to bring in three draft picks and think that they're going to make the difference on your team. If one out of the four guys that you bring into training camp performs, then you already have sort of overachieved.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, there are guys that are smart, that know this league, guys like Ben Olsen, that say, if I can get a proven player that I know what they're capable of at this level, I'll take that over three draft. I'll take that over three draft picks any day of the week.
But if I don't, I have no problems giving that pick up for allocation money, which was basically
Absolutely.
The TFC model from this past draft.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, here's the thing. If you go get allocation money and you go around and you end up spending a lot of that allocation money on one player and he's a bust, then yeah, that was a terrible business move, because, you know, the odds of three young kids panning out versus, you know, one sort of unknown overseas player, you know, it ends up sort of being a coin flip. But, you know, I think a lot of coaches, the reason they take that strategy is because they think to themselves, listen, MLS is short term. No one says, I'm going to give you 2 or 3 years to build a team. I mean, look at Robin Fraser and other great coaches that have come into positions and not been given enough time. It's, can I perform today? What can my team do this season? And I think that's why you see a lot of the guys not stick around and wait to develop these young talents and try to see if they can find someone that can make a difference day one.
So many storylines as we go into the 2013 season. We're going to have a lot of the beat writers who cover the teams day to day on Pitch Pass throughout the season and as we lead up through the preseason. Let me ask you, since you are a glamour guest, Kyle, about the two glamour teams in MLS. And we'll start with the team in your backyard, which would be LA Galaxy. What did you think about what they've done in the offseason? And then I got another question about Landon Donovan I want to ask you, but I do want to get your overview on how they handle the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing in this offseason was, well, two things. One was the extension for Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
I think that was huge. And regardless what they did in the offseason, if they were able to secure that, you were going to be excited and you were going to think the LA Galaxy have a lot to do this upcoming season. The other one is Janino. You know, I mean, I was amazed they got him back last year. And, you know, it looks like they might be able to pull that off again. And with those two players returning, you know, I think that that's a, even though there's not a lot of activity, that's a terrific offseason for them.
Okay, so let's talk about Landon.
Yeah.
My thinking is, yeah, we do give him his due for what he's accomplished, not only in the league and the marketing of the league, but also for the national team. But I tweeted this out earlier this week, and it was, if it was any other player that just didn't show up and the coach says, well, he's going to play, we just don't know when, I think there'd be a lot more of an outrage. But because Landon kind of, you know, he was sad throughout the fall, and then he kind of danced around the question of whether he retired or not, people are giving him a pass. But is that something we should be doing, or should we be holding him? I mean, he has a contract for the 2013 season. Shouldn't he at least give somebody a tip off of, I am going to play or I'm not going to play, and when I do play, it'll be at this point? He's kind of holding L.A. in hostage right now with his indecision.
Yeah, I mean, here's my feeling about the whole Landon situation. And, you know, there's been speculation, there's been talk, there's been a lot of focus on it for a while now. And, you know, and in putting aside my personal relationship with Landon, if I'm just being completely objective here and trying to make sense of this whole thing, Landon Donovan is unlike any other American player in the fact that he is probably, save for Clint Dempsey, the most high-profile American player, and the goalkeepers, of course, but field players, the highest-profile American player we've ever had. But the only one who has stayed back in MLS, who has to deal with January camps, who has to deal with the fact that the schedule doesn't line up, so when European guys are off, he's not off. I mean, he's pretty much the only one that does this year-round cycle with the microscope of being domestic on him at all times, and that's a lot to deal with. And you know, we wouldn't be saying the same thing of Clint Dempsey and all these guys, because you know, when they're over and with their European clubs and they have the summer off, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann isn't bringing them into a camp with a bunch of unknown guys expecting them to be fit. You know what I mean? That doesn't happen to the European guys. It only happens to the handful of U.S. national team staples that stay in Major League Soccer. And, you know, I've been a part of that January camp for four or five off seasons. And, you know, it was a lot for me. It's probably one of the reasons that I'm sitting here talking to you on the phone and chipping in my backyard instead of in preseason is, you know, it's taxing. It weighs on you. And that's just the physical side. And the emotional side of things with Landon, I mean, to be the number one person on the press list to be questioned after practice for over a decade, and you know, the guy just for reasons that I think are completely valid, just needed to check out, go to an island somewhere, grow his beard, and then, you know, when he was ready and he was mentally able, come back and give the LA Galaxy what he's given them for over a decade, which is just an incredible player that makes a big difference.
It's the indecision, I think, that sticks with me. It, you know, if you want to retire, fine. If you don't want to retire, that's fine, too. You've earned all this. Even if you wanted to force a move overseas and say, I'm going to now play on the international schedule, I would have a problem with that either. It's the, I might play, and I think I'm going to play, but I can't tell you when. And I think that's going to hurt L.A. no matter what he decides to do at some point over the course of the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Here's the thing is, you know, I mean, if Bruce Arena's comments are right, Landon's already said, you know, I will be back this season. You know, yeah, it definitely affects the chemistry of the team to come in late, you know, and to kind of the indecision of it all. Will he be here? Won't he be here? But I would imagine that those conversations took place behind closed doors and were kept private. And, you know, we were just kept out of the loop for a little while. But, you know, if Landon really was thinking about what he suggested, which is, you know, this might be it, I might be done, you know, I think he's earned the right at this point in his career to, you know, to wait and kind of see what's going to happen. And I sort of talked to him off the record a couple of times, and, you know, there was no lobbying to try to get out to go to England or any sort of creative strategy, you know, Landon was really contemplated not playing this game anymore. And you know, that's a huge decision to make. And for someone that had to make a decision to quit the game, I'll tell you, man, I did it with tears streaming down my face. It's not easy. And, you know, I know it's something that weighed heavily on his mind, and his relationship with LA Galaxy and Bruce Arena is such that, you know, they'll give him the Landon Donovan treatment because he's kind of earned it.
I don't think he'll ever agree to it, but that will be a fascinating book, a biography of his life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been through it all. He's absolutely been through it all. And, you know, I'm still a very big fan of his. I love seeing him on the field, and I think he makes a huge difference for the U.S. national team, let alone the LA Galaxy.
Two teams I want to ask you about before I let you go, and the next one would be New York Red Bulls. I like what they did as far as the guys that they've brought in. Geninho, you got a full season of Tim Cahill. I like his spindle, putting his finishing aside. I love his energy and what he brings to the table. However, you don't have a coach yet, and that seems to be kind of twisting in the wind. And there's a couple other holes in that team. Are New York Red Bulls better now than they were to finish last season?
You know, you could argue that on paper, and I think you brought up some valid points. My problem with New York Red Bulls is it's never going to matter what they're like on paper if they keep running things like they are off the field. You know, during the time where the New York Red Bulls were playing some of their best soccer and were poised to go to an MLS Cup, were right there in the mix, and to make an announcement that you are going to part ways with your head coach before the end of the season was, I still can't even figure out what on earth they were thinking. And it just kind of goes back to the fact that you have this enormous company running the New York Red Bulls from across the water, and it doesn't really seem like anyone has their finger on the pulse there. And until they get all of this crazy, we need to win tomorrow, let's get the most high-profile coach we can possibly get, you know, let's make some huge changes. You know, until they just understand you have the players, you just need to manage the group a little bit better, I don't think that they're going to do anything, you know? I mean, watching them play most of last season when they got things together and Thierry Henry was playing well and Rafa Márquez was finally on the field and, you know, they were really firing on all cylinders, I thought these guys were MLS Cup contenders. And then that announcement comes out, and I watched that team off the field in the locker room fall apart when they made that announcement, when Hans Bacca knew that he didn't have the support of the team and he was out the door.
So we've got Austin Berry coming up next. I want to ask you about the Fire, because I know he's going to give us the, I'm the insider, I'm going to give you the PC answer, whatever. They had a great offseason. I don't think there's any way that you can spin it otherwise. They seem to me really, really stacked. If they have any holes, where would you see the Chicago Fire as needing some help somewhere?
I mean, I'd say you could probably argue up top. You know, I think Chris Rolfe was a terrific addition and pretty much carried the team when it came to setting up goals and scoring goals. I think if he had a consistent partner up top that wasn't just a speed merchant, that was someone that was as smart as he is on the ball. And I think McDonald was terrific and held the ball up so well. But, you know, when he was out, it sort of kind of fell apart a little bit. You were just trying to stretch him deep with a Duro. And I think that's one area where they could get stronger. But I love what they did in the midfield. You know,
yeah.
I loved Pardo. I thought he was a great player, but you have to be honest. I'm sure he'd be, if you asked him directly, he couldn't cover the ground anymore. And because of that, guys like Logan Paws and Daniel Palladini and other people in the midfield had to do so much extra to make sure there wasn't holes. I think when you have a guy like Lorenzowicz and Paws and honest guys that can cover a tremendous amount of ground, you're going to unlock some of these Nyakos and Alex and some of these terrific, skillful players that can really bring a lot to the game when they don't have to constantly be worrying about the counterattack.
Do you have your SAG card, Kyle?
No, I don't. I'm just straight up.
The reason I ask you is because you were tweeting about how you were watching some movies, and I thought maybe you were getting those screener copies that they send out.
Oh, yeah, that's all wifey.
So she's in the union.
Yeah, she's the SAG girl.
So you're getting to watch these movies, because and just to take people behind the scenes, because this is my first year of doing it. So you can they send you copies of movies that are still in the theater so you can watch them, so then you can vote for the awards that are coming up in the next few weeks.
Isn't that amazing?
How awesome is it sitting in your house watching these movies where everybody else is in movie theaters?
I mean, save for that annoying guy answering his phone in the middle of the theater, it's exactly the same.
Although you do have to sign your life away about piracy and handing them out, and this is watermarked, and we're going to find you and all that other stuff. But other than that, it's awesome.
Other than a life in prison, if I send it to my friend, it's incredible to get the movie early.
All right, so Kyle, what's your schedule now moving forward? When's the first NBC Sports Network match, and what are you going to be doing from now till then?
So we're going to Arizona for some of the pregame broadcast meetings with the league, and also watch some of the teams train. And we're going to call a game from there, preseason game. I'm not sure which one yet. And then first week in March, I'm getting on a plane again, throwing that suit on, going to see my buddies Arlo and Russ, and get back in between those benches and get in the mix.
I like that you're doing the same setup. That was a very novel concept at the time of having you down on the field and Arlo up in the booth, but it worked really well. You guys didn't step on each other at all last season.
Yeah, it was. It took some getting used to tell you the truth. I was terrified at first. It was something that I didn't think I was going to be able to get comfortable with. But it's a testament to how terrific Arlo is, because he makes me feel comfortable down there, and we got into a great rhythm and really started to enjoy it.
Looking forward to 2013. Kyle Martino, thank you for joining the show. We appreciate it.
Thanks, my man.
It's Kyle Martino, NBC Sports Network. We talked a little about Chicago Fire. I teased it, so let's bring him in. Our next guest, the 2012 MLS Rookie of the Year, Austin Berry, joins Pitch Pass. Austin, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
We said at the top, we congratulated you on being the current, or I guess the reigning, Rookie of the Year. So congratulations on that. I also have to say, I'm really glad that you won, because, you know, as I was putting this all together, I was looking at your Rookie of the Year video that they put together for you. Like your sell you on it video. And I thought to myself at the beginning, I was like, wow. It's awesome that they voted for him, because this whole video is just him defending, which is not as sexy as somebody popping in goals. They saved all your goals to the end of the video.
Yeah, you know, you got to put the, you know, I'm a defender the most, but you know, I score every now and then, but you got to put the defending first. That's where I look the best.
Yeah, it's just not as sexy watching you knock someone off the ball, or you heading some like a clearance away. It's like, wow, this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, no, that's me, just heading the ball and hitting people.
That's your game. That's what you do.
there's not much footage of me on the ball or doing anything that looks good. It's just me hitting people and heading it.
Well, let me ask you this, because you've got Arnie who will be next to you, and obviously you're gleaning a lot of information off of him as a guy who's been there and done that. Do you feel maybe this season that you're like? Over the offseason, was one of the things that you said I want to work on is distribution, or was there another area that you wanted to shore up going into this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things is just being better with the ball. You know, that was one of the things I've just getting feedback from the coaches that I need to work on, and it certainly improved throughout the season, and having Arna next to me to be able to watch him on a daily basis and get his insight was fantastic for me. And this year, just, you know, not being a rookie and knowing everybody in preseason, it's a little more laid back, and I feel more comfortable now. So, you know, I'm going to start playing a little bit better.
You brought up not being a rookie and how the difference between going into last season and this season is. We just talked to Kyle Martino, and I asked him about the combine. What was your combine experience like? Was there a lot of pressure, like thinking to yourself, if I don't have a good combine, this could hurt my stock, and thus canceling out kind of everything that I thought I achieved and accomplished in college?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually a pretty pressure-filled time, because I was going into the combine without a contract, you're not really knowing what was going to happen. So I needed to have a strong showing down there in front of a lot of coaches who may not have been able to see me in college, and that the combine provided me that, and I was able to show well down there, and I had a good 3 or 4 days playing, and had some great meetings with the coaches, and you know, was able to show them what kind of person I am too. So I think the meetings as well as the games helped me out well down there, and I was able to get a contract the last day of the combine and kind of relax a little bit to go into the draft.
And I'm sure you called up Andrew Farrell over the course of this offseason and said, you're welcome, because because of what you accomplished last year. He didn't have to fight for a contract at the combines because they know that Louisville defenders can bring it.
Yeah, yeah. I kept telling him it must be nice. And I've been hanging out with him the last couple of weeks, and I was giving him a hard time and told him it must have been nice for him to have two railings and a nice little wall to walk up to the draft. And last year I didn't have that, and I tripped on the last step. So things are changing for him. He got everything.
Did he ask you for your advice at all over the course of even last season as he was gearing up for his senior year of college?
Yeah, yeah. Now he's one of the guys that I've kept in a lot of contact with that's still at Louisville, and he had a lot of questions, whether it was about agents or the combine. He had a lot of questions about the combine and the meetings with the coaches and kind of just the overall first year experience. And he's the kind of guy that he's a good character, and he always wants to learn, and he's not afraid to ask for advice. So that's, besides his athletic and soccer ability, that's what's going to help him succeed in the MLS.
Now, for people who follow MLS but maybe not so much college soccer, what can we expect from Andrew playing for the Revs this year as far as attributes? What are some of the things that we need to be looking for him?
He's just a really good, versatile player. He's very athletic. He's very shifty. But he's also he's a good soccer player. He's played since he's very young. He's played in Peru and in America, so he's got different cultural experiences. He's very good on the ball, very good distributing, and he knows what he needs to do to improve. So I think throughout the year, he's going to look good from the beginning, and I think the Revs and people watching the MLS are only going to see him get better because he's always going to try to maximize his potential.
You guys got something going on at Louisville, don't you? This last 2 years, you guys have been all over the place as far as the draft's concerned. I mean, I don't want to say the program came out of nowhere. It's not Akron yet, but it is a program now to be reckoned with. And it feels like, at least from you paying it down to Andrew, that you're starting this sort of pipeline of, all right, we're all going to look out for each other as this program rises and we start making our way into the professional ranks.
Yeah, I mean, when I first got there, it was Ken's first year, and he was trying to change and build a new culture and bring in the right kind of people that not only were good for his program, but that he thought had good character, good for the team, but that could move on to the next level. And throughout the years, we kept picking up more and more of his players, and for us to be able to play against each other on a daily basis helped us improve greatly. And Ken, he's as good as a soccer coach as anyone in the country, but he sets aside himself with his mental approach to the game, which is big in the MLS. And he's very good, and he's a very good speaker and a teacher on goal setting and visualization and be able to have confidence in yourself. So for us to have 4 years of training at Louisville with the guys that were there and to have his kind of upbringing in the mental aspect of the game has just been fantastic. And you can see with all of us coming to the MLS right now.
Well, with Caleb Porter making the move to MLS, could he be the next, guy that could have the marquee franchise or program that then will be one that people will look at and go, we'd like to see him in MLS coaching a team?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know what Ken's goals are. I know he's got very lofty goals for himself, and he's always trying to impact as many kids as he can in his life. And I think he'd be a great coach for anyone to have under him, and always support him in what he wants to do.
So I know you guys have the relationship with Atletico Madrid. You went over there during the offseason in November, the beginning of December, to train with them. How does it actually work out, though? Does Chicago say to you, hey, you feel like going to Madrid? And do you go, yeah, sure, whatever, and then you just go? Or do you go in and go, I kind of want to go to Madrid. Can we make this happen?
No, it was pretty much the first scenario you said. It was just one of the days, a couple of days before we left Chicago from our last day of training, and Guillermo and Frank came up to me and were like, hey, we have the opportunity to send you to Madrid. Do you want to go to Madrid?
You feel like going?
Took a couple hours. Yeah, said yeah, and then kind of just went from there. But it was basically that.
What is your thought as far as, like, I'm going to ask you what you got from training in Spain. But a lot of the guys in the offseason go to England. You guys have the relationship with Atletico, so it makes sense for you to go to Spain. Was there an adjustment, not just as far as the soccer is concerned, but also because of the language barrier?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think one good example was a play between me and one of the keepers who was actually from Turkey. So we didn't.
So Spanish,
didn't even come into play there. Yeah. And he's coming out and yelling for the ball and saying some word that I have no idea what it was. And I just go to clear the ball and just barely miss his face. And so we kind of had to get an interpreter in the middle of the game to kind of tell him, or tell me what the word is when he says he wants the ball. So that's something that, there's definitely a barrier, but a lot of, and it's lucky for me and Jaleel was over there. We have a little bit of a background in Spanish, so we could pick up on a little bit of stuff, but a lot of the talks and a lot of the movements and the drills that they're doing over there and a lot of the things that they're saying is pretty similar to what we're saying over here.
So speed of the game, is that the big difference that you got, or was it the technical aspect?
I think it's both. I mean, it's not that much faster, but playing when we had a couple opportunities to go up with the first team, that definitely, and the games they play are a little bit, they're structured a little bit different so that it is faster. It's more tighter. And with that, the technical aspect jumps up too. So both of those was definitely something that I noticed over there, and it was good for me because those are things that I need to work on.
So you tweeted out a picture recently, and then they posted it on the front page of the Fire's website of you hooked up to some sort of contraption with things coming out of your mouth and things on your head. What the hell did you have hooked up to you?
That was our VO2 max testing.
That sounds very complicated, Austin. Can you break that down for the layman?
I mean, it looks more complicated than it is, the contraption per se, not really all the numbers and things that go into it. That's not my field, but basically it's the most accurate testing, to see what kind of shape that we're at and what kind of shape is our max potential. And from that, our trainers and our coaches are able to shape our practices and trainings throughout the year and be able to use our heart rates to monitor that and to be able to know when we can push it a little and when we can kind of hold back. The testing in itself is pretty brutal.
So that's not the only time you'll use that over the course of the season. That's not a preseason thing. That's something we're going to gauge throughout the entire season.
I mean, that test, we will only do it in the preseason. But from the info from that, will be used throughout the season.
So why was it so brutal? What did it entail that was brutal?
It's just, I mean, it's different. And luckily for me, Tony was at Louisville, so I was able to do this with him several times before he brought it here this year. And it's just different because you're hooked up to this mask. You got a weird little contraption on you like you saw in the photo. So you have to kind of focus off of that. You can only breathe in through your mouth.
Yeah.
It goes through that tube so that they can get the readings, and your nose is plugged. So it's all these different little factors and just running with a little, like, basically dental helmet that you have on. It's just, you got to try to focus off of that and do the best you can on the test. And you're basically supposed to run it until you fall off the treadmill is what they want.
Jeez.
Would be the most accurate testing. But you want to jump off at the last possible moment when you get tired. So the more you push yourself during it, the better kind of feel and readings we can use from it.
Who scored the highest?
I think Logan scored the highest.
Oh, I thought
it was unfortunate. He was right before me. So
he put a high number
up. Really high bar.
Yeah, he puts a high number up, and then you're like, oh, thanks. Now hook me up to this thing.
This is great. Yeah, thanks for running like that, Logan. But he's one of the more fitter guys, and I think Jaleel did well in it too. And it's also by position. Tony kind of expects a different VO2 max for guys playing center back than somebody who's playing an outside mid or center mid that's running more. So it's also positionally based too.
So how glad are you to be a member of Chicago Fire who happens to be a defender? Just judging by all the offseason moves that the Fire have made, they are stacked. You guys are stacked in midfield And Kyle disagreed, but I thought you were stacked at forward as well. It's got to be good to be a defender to go, okay, at least I don't have that much competition for my place.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still, you know, on a daily basis, got to work hard and win my position, basically. But it is very exciting to get all the new guys in forward and in midfield and already playing with them just two or three times that we have. I can already see a difference in our level of play, and I'm extremely excited to have these new additions and to begin this year.
How do you find out about these acquisitions? Do you get a text and go, oh, man, we got Limpair, awesome, or do you get a call from somebody?
Just probably Twitter. or checking the MLS page. I mean, yeah, the Fire do a pretty good job in keeping up to date on Twitter. So that's probably the quickest and most up to date info I could get.
So of the new guys, or even if it's a full season with Rolf or McDonald, who are you most excited about going into the new season?
I mean, it's hard to say just one. I'm really excited to have Arna back, especially playing next to me. And he's someone who's such a great character to have in the locker room. He's a really good guy and a really good player. But on top of that, he feels a responsibility to teach the younger players, including myself.
Yeah.
And he's always there to give advice when we ask, and even when we don't ask, he's never condescending. He's always friendly, and so I'm excited about him and just getting to know Jeff and Joel and Mike Cohn. Those guys are fantastic additions, and they're good people too. And they've already you can see the difference in the level of play that they're bringing, and just excited about the whole rest of the team. I think we got a pretty tight knit group, and we're all happy and excited right now, joking around with each other that we're back, and it's a very fun time right now.
I'm going to project, because if it were me that were on the cover of a cereal box, I would spend an inordinate amount of time at grocery stores loitering around the cereal aisle in the off chance that somebody would walk by and go, wait a second, you're the dude on that box right there. Did you do that or not?
No, I mean, we were joking about that, but the cereal boxes only went out to the media members to kind of raise my parents in the middle of the
season. Come on!
Yeah, my mother and family members didn't know that, who spent 3 to 4 hours driving around downtown and suburbia Chicago trying to find cereal boxes. But we were joking about that, me and my roommates, talking about going to a Dominick's or a Whole Foods and just standing next to a cereal box and seeing if anybody gives me a little bit of recognition.
I can't find what I want. I know I've been here for 20 minutes, but I'm looking for a specific type of cereal and I cannot find it.
Exactly.
Well, Austin, thank you so much. You're the reigning rookie of the year, so enjoy it all season, because that's what everybody's going to be introducing you as on TV and even through these interviews. So enjoy it, and good luck in the 2013 season.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was nice talking to you.
For show information, go to pitchpass.com.